Talk to Martin Sherman, the director of Israel, a director of the Israel Institute for Strategic Studies, has written a very interesting article on collateral damage and how democracies wage war. Martin Sherman, good afternoon, and thank you for talking to me on Chai FM this afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me.
You've written about how democracies like Israel are judged differently than others when it comes to civilian casualties. How do you account for that?
Well, you know, I've always been very reluctant to ascribe it to anti-Semitism. But I must say there's growing evidence saying that the Jews are treated differently. It's not only that they're being subjected to a disgraceful and despicable double standard, but they're being subjected to a singular standard that's applicable only to Jews and not to anyone else, which in many ways is the epitome of anti-Semitism. Because if you look at the way other democracies have waged war, the kind of sensitivity to civilian casualties and collateral damage is nowhere to be seen, not at all.
Martin, I'm going to play devil's advocate here because, I mean, to a certain extent, I agree with what you're saying. To a certain extent, I'm doubting whether I entirely agree. And I'm just thinking about the effect of social media these days and the effect that every single smartphone has a camera on it. So whatever happens to anybody can immediately be broadcast. Do you not think, stripping Jews out of it, that given the kind of civilian casualties we're seeing in Gaza, that this wouldn't have the same effect were it happening, say, between Russia and the Ukraine?
No, I don't think so. I must say that the war in Ukraine is very difficult for me to understand. I'm trying to put myself into Putin's shoes and so why I actually committed it. But even so, you know, the kind of demonstrations you're seeing now across Europe, Australia, Canada, you know, in favor of a Muslim extremist or Islamist extremist organization which has committed the most horrendous massacre, mutilation. I think it's extremely difficult to understand. If you look at the wars across Africa, Syria, you never saw this kind of demonstration. I mean, if you look at the civilian casualties in the Syrian civil war, were tremendous. You never saw that kind of galvanizing of support for the Syrian dissidents. I think there's, you know, I'm not someone who easily adopts that kind of that kind of position, but there are things now that it's very difficult to explain without a special discriminatory attitude towards the Jews.
Many people have been shocked by the images coming out of Gaza, but you've argued that Israel has taken more care than most to avoid harm to civilians. Do you want to give me your argument for that?
Well, you know, I think there's nothing more cynical than trying to blame Israel for the civilian casualties. Israel has warned the Gazan civilians to evacuate the areas. They've been stopped from evacuating by Hamas. Hamas has held them there as human shields. And worse than that, I think one of the chief villains in this particular saga is Egypt.
Egypt. I had a feeling.
Egypt, Egypt. Egypt basically is denying the Palestinians the freedom of movement, something that has not been done anywhere. And Egypt is being exposed now as a sinister and surreptitious enemy of Israel, because there's no reason why they should do it other than trying to keep the Palestinians as a thorn in Israel's side. You know, if you look at the size of the problem, the entire Gaza population is less than 1% of the combined population of Turkey and Egypt together. They could be absorbed without any difficulty whatsoever. You know,
Do we not have ourselves to blame for this? In that, if you've got people like Ben Gvir and Smotrich in a government who are talking about resettling and expelling, do you not then, if you the Egyptian authorities think, well, if I do open my gates, I'm aiding and abetting the right wingers in the Israeli government? Is that not a dynamic to be aware of?
They really use Ben-Gurion and Smotrich as a straw man in this thing. You know, they've been, in my opinion, completely wrongly demonized, because of the entire Israeli government, the only two people who got it right were Ben-Gurion and Smotrich. Well, they got the closest to being right. And I've written about this. There is no stable solution for Gaza other than the removal of the Gazan population. If you never reached a peaceful agreement before the Gaza has been destroyed, how are you going to reach one now? What Gazan who thought that he might be playing with the idea of making peace with Israel would entertain that idea now? And how are they going to do it? It's going to take decades to make Gaza livable.
I'm incredibly, incredibly uncomfortable with what you've just said. Do you honestly believe did you honestly believe it's a process of Germany and there was a re-education process after the Second World War. Implacable Nazis went on to build Mercedes-Benzes and a very successful economy and were the stalwart of Europe. Do you honestly believe that this is not in the slightest possible, that re-education is just a waste of time?
Who's going to reconduct this education, this re-education? Who's going to do it? Without an authoritative presence for decades, this de-radicalization. And you must remember the big difference between what happened in Japan and what happened in Germany. Mm. And the Palestinian case is that Germany wasn't surrounded by a swathe of Teutonic nations, and Japan wasn't surrounded by a swathe of Nipponic nations who could undermine any peace agreement by sending in by incitement, by sending in insurgents, by agitation. It's a completely different situation at all. Why is it an axiom that there has to be Arab self-government in Gaza? Explain to me why. why didn't Egypt take over Gaza and settle it?
You've got to ask Menachem Begin why he agreed to take it.
I agree with you 100%. I think Menachem Begin is guilty of some very poor decisions. I agree with you. But I challenge anyone. And I have this argument with people on the right wing here. I challenge anyone to find a stable solution for Gaza where a large Arab population remains there. I've been writing for decades that Israel is confronted with a cruel dilemma about Gaza. In the long run, there will either be Arabs in Gaza or Jews in the Negev, but there won't be both.
Boy, that's a very confronting message you've given us this afternoon.
I think it's backed up by harsh reality. You know, we can fool us ever since Oslo, which was sort of a point of singularity in Zionism. Ever since Gaza, we've been led astray by false axioms.
Yeah, that was the irony of it. That was the death of the Israeli left right after Oslo, which was supposed to bring peace.
Well, Arafat gave you a huge hint on the first day he came back from Gaza. I don't know if you know this, but Arafat in his Mercedes Benz coming into Gaza was set on a banned terrorist to smuggle him into Gaza. That's a true story, backed up by the head of the Israeli security services. Arafat came into Gaza sitting on a wanted terrorist to smuggle him into Gaza. Wonderful start.
Martin, we're going to leave it there this afternoon. You certainly made us think this afternoon. Thank you for your time.